91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, we examine a program called the LGBTQ Safe and Healthy Schools Project, developed by the Equality Florida Institute. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. It's a statewide effort to protect lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth from serious physical, psychological, and emotional harm. Bullying and sexual assault against these youngsters is a danger. There's a high homeless rate among them. They're targets of human trafficking and have a high rate of substance abuse, HIV transmission, suicides, and even homicides. We'll visit with Equality Florida's Safe Schools statewide director, Dee Palazzo, and Miami-Dade County Public Schools curriculum support specialist, Gladys Duran, and learn more about these issues and take your calls. First, the news.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman is today's Topical Currents Monday edition. This hour, we look at the emotional health and safety of LGBTQ students in Florida's schools. The Equality Florida Institute cites frequent bullying, taunting, and physical assault of these youngsters.
There's also a high rate of family rejection, homelessness, human trafficking, sexual exploitation, substance abuse, and HIV transmission. Suicide rates are high, and there's risk of homicide.
With us now is Equality Florida's Safe School Director, Dee Palazzo, a nationally known consultant and anti-bias trainer. She's built programs and practices in Broward schools that serve as a national model. Welcome to you, Dee Palazzo.
Thank you very much, Joseph and Bonnie. A pleasure to be here.
Great to have you, Dee. Also with us is the LGBTQ coordinator for Miami-Dade County Public Schools and the curriculum support specialist and for School Allies for Equity, or SAFE, Gladys Duran. She has 16 years of experience in LGBTQ issues in various capacities, including at Miami Lakes Educational Center. Welcome to you, Gladys.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
We're going to be joined by other guests in the next segment, Jennifer and Cooper Solomon, in the next segment of our program. We want to say that the superintendent of Miami-Dade County Public Schools, Alberto Carvalho, was to join us today, but is unable to do so due to a crucial commitment on his part. So we're going to have Gladys Duran instead. Okay. Welcome to you all. Dee, let's start with you. I was thinking in preparation for today's program, I considered, in spite of the many advancements and progress in the LGBT community in the quest for equal rights, the sad truth remains, in your words, there's never been a more critical time to lift the barriers to safety and academic success that so many LGBTQ students face in their classrooms. Is there a dichotomy there? Can you talk about that?
Sure, that's a good point. And thank you for asking. Very often people say things are getting better for our young people and for our adults in the LGBTQ world. And in fact, they are. Yet at the same time, there's great disparities still in place. In fact, when I think about the state, across the state as I do statewide work, that's really a patchwork of different situations taking place in each district. Some districts are doing tremendous work, some districts aren't doing any work at all, and some districts aren't interested in doing work. So I would say there's still a great deal of mistreatment, name-calling, bullying taking place for our young people. And even though it is getting better, there's still great challenges, largely based on context, et cetera.
Well, let's get an overview of Equality Florida's Safe and Healthy Schools Project. How, when, and why did
sure.
it come to be?
Yeah. So Equality Florida, about 8 months ago, realized that the time was both, I say, right and ripe to initiate deeper safe schools work. Equality Florida has been doing safe schools work for a number of years. However, now it's actually at a deeper level. We know that, so what we have done is we took a look across the state and we realized that there are things happening that are positive and things that are not. So we realized that our young people are still having great difficulties in school. And we looked for three things that we were interested in doing. We wanted to begin what's called a Safe Schools Equality Index, which we would take a look at districts across the state to see, with a rubric, how well are they doing in reference to best practices and inclusivity for LGBTQ youth.
What are those benchmarks?
Yeah, great question. We're in the process of creating them now. There's really five or six best practices for LGBTQ youth. One is certainly high on the list is professional development by upper-level leadership, as well as support staff and teachers. Another very important one is signaling from the top. And I call it that because we know that a district really pays attention to the superintendent, associate superintendent. And if the superintendent, associate superintendent is saying such things as, of course we have diversity in our district, and part of our diversity relates to LGBTQ youth, I expect best practices to take place for all of our young people, including LGBT youth, to keep them safe. So that's two of the best practices that are really starting to happen across the state based on our statewide work.
Gladys, I want to get to you, but I just want to stick on this why for a bit, on this safe and healthy schools. Just to be clear, in spite of the many, the program launched just weeks after the release of the many advancements. This released just weeks after the CDC and Prevention's 2015 Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which found that LGBT youth continue to face deeply disturbing and life-threatening issues. Can we talk about some of those, beginning with the risk factors they face, suicide ideations and attempts? What are those numbers that was released from the CDC?
Sure. I'm happy to share them with you. So there's two studies that we're looking at particularly, and it's the most contemporary research. One is the GLSEN National School Climate Survey. And in that survey, it takes a look at 10,500 young people across the nation. And the picture that is painted is really terrible risk factors still with our youth. For example, almost 58% of LGBTQ students feel unsafe at school because of their sexual orientation, and 40% because of their gender expression, still in 2017. 85% of LGBTQ students in that 10,500 that were polled were called names or threatened at school. And close to a third of LGBT students missed at least one entire day of school in the past month due to feeling unsafe or uncomfortable. When we drill down a little bit deeper, we have the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. That survey is a well-respected survey done by school districts in Florida, and it's given every other year. The 2015 Youth Risk Behavior Survey found some really sobering and disturbing results. According to the survey, our young people, they took a look at straight identified young people and LGB, and they looked at risk factors and found that LGB young people felt sad or hopeless every day for 2 weeks, double the amount that our straight identified youth felt. So close to double that rate than our straight identified students. These are looking at, by the way, the five largest districts in the state I'm paying attention to. And then something else is the percentage of students who seriously considered suicide during the 12 months of the survey. The Florida rate for straight-identified students is 10.7. The Florida rate for LGB students is four times that average, 40.5%.
Many of the kids who bully and slur in these environments are probably mirroring views of their parents and all of their peers. What's going on to make homes more accepting also?
Can we, in fact, Gladys Duran, as the LGBT coordinator for Miami-Dade County Public Schools, can you address that?
Sure. We are offering schools presentations for parent-teacher associations so that we can educate parents. We do a lot of the work in the schools bringing awareness on bullying for all students, not just the LGBT right. students, because many of the students that are being harassed and being called slurs are students that may not be LGBT. They're perceived as LGBT. So we do a great focus on prevention of bullying. We have community involvement with different agencies that Dee will be mentioning later on, and we encourage them to come into our schools and to provide support to parents of children who are LGBT.
Well, sticking with Joe's question, I'm just wondering if some children who are indoctrinated to turn their backs on their LGBT peers or to bully them or harass them, do you have to deal with their confusion if their parents are telling them one thing and they're learning something else at school?
Yes, we try to enforce every policy that Miami-Dade County Public Schools has so that we can protect every student in our school system. if parents are in telling their children something else at home and they're having to come to school and follow other rules,
right.
those are the rules of the schools, and parents are informed of those rules at the beginning of the school year with the student code of conduct and what's expected of their child.
Bunny, I might say that when I speak and I do professional development trainings across the state, this question comes up often. And I often say it is our legal, ethical, and professional responsibility to ensure that every young person in every school district is safe, valued, and respected so that they're soar, so that they become 21st century learners. So that's an important piece to know. Policy is a very important piece. And on policies, presently, one-third of our states, one-third of the districts in Florida have LGBTQ protections, meaning two-thirds do not in their policies. So part of what Equality Florida does is work toward that.
What's been the overall reaction, Gladys? Maybe, I don't know if you know this, I was going to ask the superintendent, in the district, in Miami-Dade, to the Safe and Healthy Schools program. Has there been any resistance from the community or from some teachers, parents, students?
I haven't noticed much resistance. We really come in and in an educational forum, letting people know, especially the school staff, what their ethical responsibilities are to every student in our school is to ensure that they're safe and that they're able to learn every day in our schools.
We're speaking about the Safe and Healthy Schools Project. It's an initiative to assist LGBTQ youth deal with family rejection, social isolation, bullying, harassment, violence, homelessness, and several other things. Gladys Duran is the LGBT coordinator for Miami-Dade County Public Schools and a curriculum support specialist. We also are with Dee Palazzo. She's the statewide director of Equality Florida's Safe and Healthy Schools Project. We'll be joined when we come back by Jennifer and Cooper Solomon as well. Stay with us.
And we're back 18 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's topical current. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're speaking with the Equality Florida's Safe School Director, Dee Palazzo, also Gladys Duran of Miami-Dade County Public Schools. She's a curriculum support specialist.
Joining us now, Jennifer Solomon is the South Miami Chapter President of PFLAG, Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. It's the nation's largest organization for parents, families, friends, and allies united with people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning. Jennifer's a registered nurse and runs the Blessings in a Backpack program at Palmetto Elementary School, among many other things. Welcome to you, Jennifer Solomon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Jennifer's son, Cooper. He's 6 years old. He's gender nonconforming, and he loves a lot of different things. And welcome to you, Cooper.
Thank you.
Okay, it's good to have you. Cooper, I'd like to start with you. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Speak up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Why did you want to join us for the conversation today? Was there something you wanted to say? Was there some thing you wanted to tell people?
It's okay.
No.
No? What does it mean to be gender nonconforming? Do you know what that means?
That means that you like girl stuff and boy stuff.
Okay. And when you're 6 years old, I'm just wondering when you first realized that you that you were comfortable with both things, what boys like and what girls like.
What do you mean?
Well, how long was it, this year or was it last year?
It was last year.
So you were 5 years old.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so I'm just wondering, because I sort of remember when I was 5 years old. It just seems like a lot to deal with when you're so young. Do you ever feel like this is a burden or too much pressure for you?
No.
No?
No.
That's great.
Jennifer, do you ever think that?
Well, as a parent, I think we...
This is Cooper's mother.
Yes, Cooper's mother. I think we all want our kids to have the easiest life. And obviously, when I realized that he was gender nonconforming, there's a lot of concerns as a parent. One of them, of course, is his safety, his happiness, his health. So I don't so much think as a burden as a change in maybe my journey as a parent.
Do you feel you might be sort of making a poster child of him? Or that?
I think Cooper once told me, Mom, I think I was brought onto this earth to teach people that it's okay for boys to wear girl things. And he's very comfortable who he is. So I feel that I am just maybe his voice for when he's older, because I do believe he'll probably be an advocate. He's not been bullied. He has not dealt with any of that yet. So as of now, I mean, and hopefully he always will have this self-esteem intact. And I feel like I'm just maybe a vehicle for him until he's older and he's able to speak for himself.
Cooper, how do you feel about everything? Like, what are you feeling now?
Good.
Okay. Can you explain a little more? Like, what do you feel when you go to school? Do you feel fear? Do you feel accepted by your friends or by your schoolmates? Or do you feel more isolated? How do you feel in school?
I feel okay.
You feel okay?
Mm-hmm.
And do your friends play with you?
Yeah.
And they accept you?
Yeah.
Who are your best friends in school?
Valentina. Layla.
Okay. Two's good.
Jennifer, how important is this Safe and Healthy Schools initiative to you?
Well, of course, this is, to me, the top priority as a parent, especially of a child in the LGBTQ community, is safety. Before Cooper's in kindergarten, he's finishing up his first year, and before he even entered the Miami-Dade County Schools, I actually contacted Gladys and asked what was in place, what was there as protection for my child. Cooper's not transgender, so Cooper is a boy that wears girl things, which has its own set of concerns as well. I'm happy to say that the Dade County Schools have been unbelievable as far as protecting him. I feel very safe. We've been very, very lucky. Cooper goes to Palmetto Elementary School, and Mr. Torres, the principal, has gone out of his way to ask me what concerns I have. Is there anything he can do? His kindergarten teacher, not only has she been supportive in the school, she actually marched with us in the Miami Pride Parade, just as a support for Cooper. So we've been extremely lucky, and I feel that it's really important to educate his class. The children are amazing. Of course, they have questions. Cooper, why do you wear girl things? He's got great answers right now. He's being very shy, but he usually says, well, that's just my style. And children at young age, if they are presented with this kind of normal, that it's okay to wear clothes or clothes, colors or colors, you're going to find a very loving, accepting place. And right now, that to me is top priority in the schools, to make sure that our children are given the opportunity to learn about diversity and acceptance, and create a generation that is learning not just reading and writing, but acceptance and diversity as well. And I really have been very pleased with what I've seen so far. Again, we're at the beginning of our journey being in kindergarten, but I've had three other kids go through the Dade County Schools, and I feel very safe and very lucky to be in the school district.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that may be quicker, radio@WLRN.org.
Cooper, I understand you love dance and music. Yes?
Yes.
What kind of dance and what kind of music do you love?
I love the song Wrecking Ball, and I like hip-hop.
Oh. You like hip-hop.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
So, Dee.
Yes.
Tell me your impressions.
Well, it is so beautiful to see Cooper, because Cooper is who he is. And this is the important piece of our work that we're trying to do, Miami-Dade Public Schools and Equality Florida, with our work across the state. There's so many young people out there that are unique. And often when I meet with people, I'd like to begin the conversation with, of course, we know there's a lot of marginalized young people out there, not just LGBTQ, not just lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning.
That's for sure.
Why this particular group are we paying attention to? Why is this group brought more to the surface? And I pose that, and really I believe there's really three reasons. When I think about young people, and I've been a teacher for a long time, and I love children. I taught special ed students just about Cooper's age, a little older. There are three places that young people go for social support. One is their family, if they have a family. Some young people don't have a family. There's young people that experience homelessness that don't have a family, many others. One is their family. One is their place of worship, if they choose a place of worship, their church, temple, or mosque. And the other is school. For young people that are LGBT, often, not always, families and them have some conflict,
right.
Sometimes to the point of rejection even. We know it's getting better, without a doubt, but there's still challenges. In our places of worship, yes, it's getting better as well, but we still know that there are places where adults preach from the pulpit that it's not okay to be gay in 2017. And
No, no. You created a model program in Broward. Tell the highlights of that.
Thank you.
What makes it so different?
I would say the systemic support that has taken place. The leadership of our superintendent in Broward, like Alberta Carvalho, has said from the top, LGBTQ youth will be taken care of, made safe. He understood the at-risk factors. So did our school board. And that type of leadership is key. They allowed me a lot of freedom to be able to really put systemic, instructional, institutionalized support in place with professional development, with signaling from our wonderful superintendent, with supporting our gay straight student alliances, with having an LGBT champion in each school, that's an adult that actually wears an LGBT liaison badge, who is the go-to person. And in finally, in Broward County, a 100% position was devoted to LGBTQ needs for a period of 8 years and still going, and that was me for 5 years.
I'm thinking it seems that what we're trying to do here is to transform our culture.
Yes.
The whole culture, the culture of discrimination, harassment, rejection. And it's changing hearts and minds. It's
correct.
A hard thing to do. So what are we doing in terms of curricula in the schools? Gladys.
For Miami-Dade County Public
yeah.
Schools, we also have a safe liaison in every elementary, middle, and high school.
And the SAFE, again, stands for?
School Allies for Equity Network.
Okay.
And these liaisons are trained quarterly, 4 times a year, to stay up to date with anything that is relevant to LGBT youth in relation to their well-being, to their safety, and to their support, helping find support at home. The curriculums in the school that we, as the SAFE liaison or the Gay Straight Alliance sponsor at particular schools, few middle schools, but most high schools have a GSA, Gay Straight Alliance. They come in and they do national GLSEN-sponsored events at the schools. It's not per se a curriculum, but it is advocacy activities that take place at different times throughout the year.
If a kid is bullied, threatened, or physically harmed because of his sexual identity, what's the procedure for reporting that and also to keep recriminations from becoming even worse?
The first procedure
is
for...
It must be very difficult for them to also get help.
Well, our teachers are trained to know what to look for mm-hmm. in relation to bullying and to any situation that will intimidate or make a child's environment not safe. So they know, teachers know, and who to report these instances to, either to an administrator or to a student services member in the student services office, to be able to address, first and foremost, that child feels safe, that they're okay, and that we're going to make sure that what this situation is occurring due to bullying or due to discrimination, that we are going to come in and we're going to do lessons either in the classroom or meet with those students that are being insensitive or discriminatory because they are violating our policies in our schools, and they just need to be addressed and reminded. We don't like to punish the children because sometimes they do things not knowing that they're hurting another child.
Mm-hmm.
And so we first try to speak to that child that did that bullying or that discrimination to let them know that, first of all, it's not going to be tolerated. And, you know, what are the repercussions that can happen not only for you in the future, but for other people who are victimized or hurt? We don't know what our words or our actions can have an effect on others.
Dee, you wanted to add something.
Yes, I wanted to say we are very lucky in Miami-Dade Public Schools, Broward Public Schools as well. But there are many instances across the state in districts where this is not taking place.
Right. Let's talk about that. Because you're saying there are those who are doing nothing and there are those who, we have to take a break, don't we?
Well, we keep going.
Okay. Those who you differentiated between those who are doing nothing and those who don't want to do anything.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I would like to say, for me, the glass is often half full. So I would like to begin with, it's incredible that as I work across the state, so many school districts have leaned in to have an interest in meeting with me to talk about what are the best practices that need to be in place and how do we help these young people who are coming out more and more. Research is pointing in now, it's more like 14 to 18% of our population based on Youth Risk Behavior Survey and the CDC. So we're looking toward working with those districts. And I have been in the 8 months of my position, I've been lucky to be in 27 districts. In those 27 districts, they're really leaning in and paying attention. And one of the first things I share with them is the signaling and best practices. And the best practices relating to professional development allows us to be able to go in and train assistant principals, principals, and support staff. And in this short time, we've been able to train 2,200 assistant principals, principals, and support staff. So excited about that.
And we'll roll through the break.
Okay. Okay, so continue with that. Continue with that. So you've trained how many?
Yeah, 2,200 principals, assistant principals, and support staff.
And superintendents you've worked with as well.
Yes. I've been able to meet with 11 superintendents. And I say that because I find it astounding because our superintendents are so incredibly busy across the United States, let alone Florida. And they're taking the time to meet with Equality Florida, to meet with us. Why? I believe when they're in the meeting, I can see they want to know what they can do to assist our young people. This is not the case in all districts, because there have been districts where I've called, phoned, and the answer is we're not interested in the subject at this time. There's been districts where I've actually sat with superintendents, I've shared my information, and they shook my hand and said, thank you for meeting me, and escorted me to the door. However, there are many districts that are saying, we're interested in what you can do to assist. Please come and do professional development with us. Please teach us around Gay Straight Student Alliance summits, etc. We want to be a model district.
So it might be just a matter of time for many of these other districts to come around, perhaps?
Well, I think there's some challenges. As we know, our young people, as I shared with you, have those three places for support. I do want to say that anti-gay name-calling is still very prevalent, and even in 2017. And I think it will take a little time, because I believe sometimes those that are in our schools aren't parsing out the difference between ensuring that every young child is safe and whatever your beliefs or values are. That's why, to me, professional development is incredibly important and beginning conversations. And once that happens, I think things will begin to open up. But as we know, context takes time, and different districts are different places based on rural, conservative, etc.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, you're certainly welcome, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email, that's radio@wlrn.org. Our first caller, this is a Cutler Bay caller, name of Fidelma, is that correct?
Hi, that's right.
Fidelma, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was calling actually because my son is in Cooper's class at Palmetto, and I just wanted to say whatever it is you guys are doing with professional development, it's working. You know, I remember when I was a little girl in elementary school, kids were ostracized all the time for all sorts of reasons, you know, orientation or background. And, you know, that's just not the case anymore, definitely not in our classroom. Everybody loves Cooper, and I know we all support him very much, and we're so very proud of him.
Oh, Fidelma, thanks for calling. Cooper, do you want to say anything? Do you want to say?
Thank you.
You got it, bud. I'll see you in school.
Okay.
That's Lucas's mom. Do you want to say anything else?
No.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay, we have an email from a Miami-Dade County Public School counselor who says, I think it's great that all schools have a safe liaison, but the fact of the matter is it's just a designation. There aren't enough trust counselors and social workers in the schools to implement the program and provide the safety net these kids need. When is the district going to recognize that these professionals are needed and hire staff? Also, why don't we have diversity curriculum? And sometimes the teachers are as bad as the kids when it comes to bullying. They need training in diversity and appropriate language, too, inclusive language. Gladys, do you want to address that first?
Yes.
That's from a counselor.
Yes, I understand. We have student services personnel in every school. And last year and this year, we've trained the counselors on LGBT issues. And I understand that we may not have specific positions to address this particular topic in each school as a unified position, but there are several positions in student services that are counselors. Some schools have trust counselors. Some schools have the social workers and school psychologists that are there to provide support for the students. Most recently in the summer, principals were trained to be aware of students that are LGBT and how to support them in their schools and how to use our anti-discrimination policies and our the different policies that the school system has to be able to enforce the safety and well-being of students in their schools.
What about classmates that are bullying and attacking on social media?
That's addressed also in the schools. I urge any student that is having this issue through social media or even in schools, if a teacher is not aware of it, that they come forward and they speak to their teacher, they speak to a student services personnel, and or come to the principal to talk to them about what their issues are. A lot of times they'll see that when we find out that these issues are going on, we'll come in and we'll address them.
Dee, you were going to respond to this
email.
Sure.
Thank you. Yes. I think it's an important piece that she had said. Miami-Dade has tremendous things in place, and yet there's always still room for growth, as we know. Research I wanted to point out to you cites that LGBT harassment in schools takes place by students, and interestingly enough, and I'm a teacher, and I adore teachers.
I wanted to.
Yes, over half of our 10,500 young people polled across the United States that were LGBT reported hearing homophobic remark from teachers or other school staff.
Okay.
This is concerning, obviously, and I believe that our teachers are fantastic. However, there's room for growth. And what I mean by that is I believe when professional development takes place and more sensitivity and empathy is developed, teachers will understand more, they'll be more comfortable with it, and sometimes our teachers break preconceived assumptions and biases into the classroom. So we need to dispel that, because the first place our LGBTQ youth go in schools is teachers for support. They don't go to your social worker.
And we just want to point out you were a teacher for 25 years in Broward County Public Schools.
Yes, okay. And loved it.
And loved,
loved
it.
Every bit of it, yes.
Jennifer, I wanted to ask you, how did you learn that Cooper was sexually nonconforming? Did he come to you and tell you, or did he explain it, or how did you learn?
So Cooper's my fourth child, and so being a seasoned parent, you sort of know that your child's going to experiment. There's going to be different stages. There's going to be phases that they go through. And when Cooper was was able to express himself, I'd like to say 18 months, 2 years old, I noticed he gravitated towards feminine things, Barbie dolls. He would take objects, and especially when Frozen came out, he wanted to be Elsa. He would take his baby blanket and wrap it around his head to make the hair. And this lasted longer than what I would have normally expected a phase. So I did like any parent would do. I started researching and realized that there was something a little bit different about my child's behavior. And when I looked into it, I realized that there was a whole world that I didn't know about, and it's gender identity. Cooper, being 6 years old, doesn't know his sexuality. His identity is his gender. Children know their gender identity by ages 2 to 3. And again, this doesn't mean every little boy that plays in a kitchen is gender nonconforming,
right.
But basically when you see a child that's consistent with their preferences, you may have a child that is on the gender scale, is what I like to call it. I think that the most important thing a parent can do, and why I really was very adamant about starting the PFLAG chapter here, is having other parents and other people to share your stories with and find a support system. When I did find a support system, which there's a group that we meet in Broward, there's one now in Dade County, for parents of transgender and gender nonconforming children ages 3 to 11. Years ago, to think that there even was a need for a support group for children 3 to 11.
Right.
But there is, and it's amazing to find other parents that are in the same situation as you. And so when I discovered that, I did as much research as I could because I wanted to be the best parent I could for Cooper, and I wanted to make sure that I was doing the proper things. Do I take away the girl things? Does that mean that this issue will go away? And from what I've learned and what we've seen, he was born this way. He loves that song with Lady Gaga. He was born this way, and I truly believe that he was, and as a parent, it's my job to support him.
Let's take another call. We've got Jose in Boca Raton. Hello there.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for having the discussion. First, I just want to say, you know, the little boy, 5 years old, wow, he's an amazing kid for, you know, being able to, you know, speak his mind about how he feels. And the mother, just want to say, you know, I'm glad that you're there supporting him and everything that you're doing. But I will say that as a father of four myself, and one being a five-year-old boy, he, you know, they right now are exploring, you know, yes, you know, they'll sing the Elsa song. Yes, they'll maybe wear the sister's clothes. But it, to me, as a father, it's my role, I believe, to say, you're a boy. Right now, this is, you know, this is how boys act. This is how we act. This is how girls act. The mom, you know, she teaches her about makeup and nail polish and dresses and hair bows. And I teach my boys just that we're a little different. Now, you mentioned that you know that he is different because, you know, he's your son and you see him develop. And I agree with that because I have kids and you see them all develop in different ways. But I also, as a biology major, know that they go through changes all throughout their lives. And I think to be consistent with societal norms, if you tell them that you're going to be a girl, you're a girl, then they're going to believe, you know, that they're a girl. So I think that it might be best to just kind of step back and give them the roles that they are, you know, they are. And how society.
Okay, we get your point, Jennifer.
Yeah,
eventually, you know, they'll be able to have a more intelligent conversation about who they really are. Because I'm sorry, he's five, he's an intelligent boy, but he wasn't really articulating much from this conversation about who he is. You're telling him about who he is.
Well, Jose, I think he's a little shy from being in front of a microphone. At least there's that as well. But let's let Jennifer respond, and then Dee.
Okay, so I do understand as a parent putting certain rules and things in front of your child, but I will tell you that when I started researching and realizing that my son was this was more than a phase, and I just so you know, I have two girls and two boys, so this wasn't a house full of girls, and he only had girl things to play with or pick out of. Cooper had anything he would like, and he still does. And he does gender nonconforming basically does not mean that he's a girl. He doesn't feel that he's a girl. He feels he's a boy. There's days that he is dressed in superhero clothes and he's Superman. And there's other days that he likes to wear a dress and feel beautiful. And my child was born this way, and there's pretty much no way that I would or any parent would want their child to have a harder life. So to assume that I would want this for my child, I think is wrong, because there's no way that you can make your child this way. One of the things that really concerned me was when I was researching late one night and I saw the statistics, the suicide statistics of these children and the mental health anguish that these children go through. I had a choice to make as a parent. Was I going to have a child? And you're right, as a parent, I could take away every bit of makeup, every girl toy, every dress, and force him to be a boy. I absolutely could. But I also could have a child who then is dealing with a lot of issues because I'm stopping him from being who he is. I chose to have a child that is happy and healthy and living in a safe environment. And I chose not to be my child's first bully. So until you walk in the shoes that I am, I don't think you can truly say. And again, I appreciate your thoughts as a parent. And I didn't have these issues with my other children. But when I realized that my child needed me to be supportive, 50% of these children commit suicide. I chose to have a child, a boy, who likes girl things and is alive and well, rather than a boy who's dead.
And Jennifer, I just want to say at the very outset of the program, of your introduction, you did mention that it was a little difficult in terms of what you want is a child who has it easier and who is safe, and that these are concerns that you didn't obviously choose, as didn't Cooper choose. So I think that's very clear. But Dee, you wanted to add something.
No, I wanted to echo the great challenges that young people that identify as transgender, and Cooper is not transgender, but young people that identify as transgender have so many challenges. And there's a large stigma around it. And also realizing that your core identity does not line up with your natal sex assigned at birth is surprising. And our suicide rates are ridiculously high. I have young people that call me that know that I'm the statewide safe schools director and call me. And the theme is always the same. It is, will you please let me just be who I am in schools? Mm-hmm. I just want to be my authentic self. And they literally say to me, I just want to go to the bathroom in peace, Dee. I want to go into the stall, use the restroom, that's it. And I just want to be honored for who I am with my affirmed names and pronouns being used. That is not the case in all school districts, and that's what we're working toward as a coalition.
Dee Palazzo is the statewide director of Equality Florida's Safe and Healthy Schools Project, 25 years as a classroom teacher in the Broward County Public School District. We're also with Gladys Duran. She's the LGBTQ coordinator for Miami-Dade County Public Schools and the Curriculum Support Specialist. We're also visiting with Jennifer Solomon and Cooper Solomon, and we'll be right back.
And we return with today's topical currents. We're speaking with Cooper Solomon and also Jennifer Solomon, Dee Palazzo, and Gladys Duran. We're talking about LGBTQ students.
And Safe and Healthy Schools, which is the initiative to assist LGBTQ youth deal with the issues that are presented. Gladys Duran, you're the LGBT coordinator for Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and you wanted to respond also to Jose's call.
Yes. I just want parents to realize that when children have these three factors, either if they're transgender or gender nonconforming, if they're insistent, persistent, and consistent with either wanting to play or say that they're a boy or a girl, or play with girl things or wear dresses, that if they have these three things, it's important for parents to seek help and to seek assistance so that they can have the best outcome for their child. It's very scary for parents to see this happening in their child, and they want to follow social norms and do what a parent is supposed to do. But if you're seeing that your child is not being responsive to your redirection and to you telling them that this is what you're supposed to do, and they're insistent, persistent, and consistent, I urge parents to seek assistance either at a school, if their child is at a school, or with mental health professionals in the community to help them.
And I'm thinking, you know, Jose had the best intentions when he called and is just saying what he felt as a father and a biologist. And mm-hmm. It's so important, though, and as Jennifer said, the suicide rate among kids who are bullied by their parents as their first bully, told not that they can't be who they are, mm-hmm. You know, how tragic that is. So that is great advice, you know.
Yes. Let's take another phone call. We've got Sandra in Lake Worth. Sandra, go ahead. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm really enjoying the discussion, although I'm up here in Palm Beach County. I'm a Girl Scout leader, so I come in contact with girls who get bullied all the time because they are not following, you know, gender norms as they're established. So my question to you is, you were discussing about policies and zero tolerance and discussions and information given and informing the students and the parents that there's a, you know, there are consequences. But what are the consequences? If you have students, you have children, my Girl Scouts specifically are high school age, which are, you know, it's really tremendous. You're trying to create, you know, your identity, and you're trying to become an adult, and it's really difficult when you're getting all this negativity, and you're getting ridiculed. So who are you as an adult, as you're trying to develop?
But you have these kids whose families are bigoted and intolerant. So, you know, you did touch on the difference in information being given by the schools versus what they're getting at home. Mm-hmm. And granted, they're at school more than they're at home. But if they're being directed by a doctrine given to them or drilled into them by their families, there's no turning that around. They're going to continue to be that way. So what are the consequences? Do you remove the bullies from the classroom? Are we going to now have to have schools for bullies? Because,
let's,
you know,
Sandra, we're very short on time. So let's let Gladys address this.
What we do is follow our student code of conduct, and we are able to enforce, depending on the activities that are taking place or the bullying that's taking place, there's certain steps that principals or assistant principals enforce, either through counseling. The last resort is removing a child from a classroom if necessary to provide a safe environment for everyone, but that is of last resort. We always come in with the education. We believe that our students are able to learn, despite what they're being taught at home. They're able to learn to accept and to love one another without being discriminatory. You can have your beliefs and your religion at home, but you can come to school and still be a classmate, still work together, and still accomplish what we need to accomplish in a school at the end of the day.
Dee?
Yeah, and I also think the key is to open up conversation with different groups of people. And I'd like to say that the Parent Teachers Association in Florida has been a leader in the field of embracing young people who are different or in at risk, and have included our LGBTQ youth. So our Parent Teacher Association is really coming on board and developing more and more conversations to help others learn.
Also want to add that Jennifer Solomon was a Girl Scout leader for how many years?
Over a decade.
Okay. I want to just let you know right now that immediately following Topical Currents today, the show will end at, you know, in just a couple of minutes, as always. But at 2 o'clock, we're going to feature a Facebook Live video with the WLRN news team, with our guests, and continue our conversation. We'll take your questions and comments. What you do, don't go yet, or you can get ready for it. You can go to the WLRN Facebook page. You can watch. You can participate in the conversation. And we want to thank the digital director of WLRN News, Teresa Frontato, and Katie Lepre, the engagement producer. We'll be doing that in just a couple of minutes. So please go to WLRN's Facebook page to continue the conversation.
Isn't there a possibility that if the LGBTQ effort isn't observed by school districts, that state funding can be withheld?
Well, that's a good question. We know that there's a lot of lawsuits that are taking place.
If orientation rights aren't observed.
Yeah. Our lawsuits are taking place with parents and young people around LGBTQ needs in reference to confidentiality, in reference to transgender youth safety. So, yes, I mean, that some of this is against federal law and federal rights, including Title IX, et cetera.
Dee, we just have a few seconds, but I want to talk about the coalition between Equality Florida and the other bodies that are taking part in this effort.
Yeah, thank you. Miami-Dade is a model for our state, one of the places in our state, not the only place, that we are pairing together groups of nonprofit organizations that focus on youth, not just LGBTQ youth, but youth, and bringing them together with the school district to create a collaboration in a community. And I'm so proud of the work that Miami-Dade Public Schools has done. We have began meeting with the Superintendent Carvalho back in November and have had four meetings with him, one of the meetings being with a bunch of our youth, LGBT youth. And what has happened is a coalition has been built, and that coalition consists of wonderful organizations. They are Pride Lines, Safe Schools South Florida, the Alliance for GLBT Youth, the Yes Institute, Lotus House Women's Shelter, the Jewish Community Center, PFLAG, and Equality Florida. And we together are meeting with Gladys and school board leadership and the superintendent, and really looking to shift so institutionalized
shift
this work continues.
Culture. Well, we want to thank you. Dee Palazzo is the statewide director of Equality Florida's Safe and Healthy Schools Project, a native of Florida. She spent 25 years as a classroom teacher in Broward County. Ms. Gladys Duran is the LGBT coordinator for Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and she's a curriculum support specialist, School Allies for Equity Safe Network. We also were with Jennifer Solomon and her son, Cooper Solomon. Cooper and Jennifer and Gladys and Dee will be continuing our conversation on Facebook, on WLRN's Facebook page. So thank you all for coming this far.
Thank you so much
for having us.
Thank you.
And thanks for tuning in. Thanks for making us your companion today. Our lead producer is Richard Ives. Technical directions from online producer Jason Sapka. Polly Landis produced this program. As always, you can find free audio archives of each program at our website, WLRN.org. Join us tomorrow for a topical occurrence with a bit of a twist. We'll talk about a popular internet feature which covers 37 things you'll regret when you're old, such as, for example, not taking school seriously or staying too long in a bad relationship. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.